right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 Podcast. I'm your host, Bryce Paul. As always, joined by my good buddy, my compadre, Mr. Brendan Veman. How are you doing, buddy?
Bryce, as per usual, we're doing great over here. On a bit of a emotional roller coaster in the crypto markets, but it's turning out to be quite the bullish one. So I'm all about it.
Yes, I was on an emotional roller coaster myself personally this past weekend. Attended the Beach Life Festival and saw some mind-melting music. Lost my voice here. So if everybody's listening and they're like, that doesn't sound like Bryce, I think that's an AI or that's a stand-in. It's really me. I just lost my voice. So we have an AI expert with us today. And somebody who's been on the show before, somebody that we actually get, I mean, I would say of all the guests that we get, Humayun Sheikh from Fetch AI, the CEO and co-founder, or CEO and founder, is one of the most requested guests that we get. And so it is a really big honor and pleasure to have you back on with us, Humayun. Everybody's excited about AI. Everybody's excited about the leading coin in this sector, which is Fetch. Welcome to the show, and how the heck are you doing today?
Thank you, guys. Really, really enjoy being in the show. I think you guys ask some amazing questions, and I love being here. So anytime, and you know, I love speaking to the community, although perhaps some would say I don't do it enough, but I guess I've got to do other things too, right? So build the AI.
It's tough. You're a man in high demand, and there's just a lot going on. You get pulled in a lot of places, and so we appreciate you taking the time with us. we're excited. I think everybody probably has heard of artificial intelligence at this point, but maybe not everybody has heard of Fetch AI yet. And so let's just catch everybody up before we get to some of those classically good and Crypto 101 curious questions. Let's just do a high level. Tell us about Fetch AI and what are you guys on a mission to do?
Have you ever wanted to trade Bitcoin but haven't dared tried? With Plus 500 Futures, you can trade crypto without the hassle of opening a wallet. With just a few clicks, you can register and start practicing with their free and unlimited demo. See a trading opportunity? You'll be able to trade in just two clicks. Feel ready? You can move to real money with as little as $100 once your account is approved. And the great thing is that in addition to crypto, Plus 500 gives you access to a wide range of instruments like the S&P 500, NASDAQ, gas, and much more. Explore equity indices like energy, metals, Forex, and beyond. With a simple and intuitive platform, you can trade anytime, anywhere. Experience the fast, accessible futures trading you've been waiting for with Plus 500. With over 20 years of experience, Plus 500 is your gateway to the markets. Visit us.plus500.com to learn more. Trading in futures involves risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify, and this is not personal financial advice. Plus 500, it's trading with a plus.
Right. So our mission is to bring AI to the masses. So we want to build platform, applications, framework, whatever you want to call it. We want to put AI in everybody's hands. And, you know, it's kind of a very, you know, AI is meant to be untouchable and, you know, all the big corporates do it. We all use it all the time. When you open your email, when you go in your car, when you go on your phone, you're using AI. And I think what is now changing is this AI is becoming much better. It's becoming much more accessible. And really, our job is to, one, bring it to everybody. Bring it to small businesses so they can use it, bring it to individuals so they can really extract the value out of it, and then also advance it in the sense that this new AI paradigm shift that is coming, it's gonna change a few things. It's going to change the way we write software, or do we even write software? We don't even have to write software. It's going to change the marketplace structure. So we're bringing that change alongside other partners, which are kind of developing AI. We bring a special kind of a structuring, which is called agentic networks. So we are saying agents are what's going to be the future of applications. And Fetch is leading the charge in building the platform, building the communication protocols, building the tools, which enables you to build applications based on agents. That hopefully covers it.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, basically we've had our big breakout moment in AI when it's now with ChatGPT and yeah. Meta now on Instagram as a little chat box, and, you know, Microsoft. And I mean, you name the company, there's AI at our fingertips now that it's much more in an exposed way. Like you said, AI, we've been using it in behind the scenes, never really knowing that it's, you know, powering a lot of the applications that we're using, but now it's in your face. So we had our breakout moment. AI is kind of on the big screen, and then NVIDIA blows up, and the whole story about, you know, AI being the workhorse for the entire, you know, GDP, basically saying, you know, this is going to be responsible for, you know, massive increases in growth and stuff. And so what's the big vision for AI? You said it's going to be, you know, part of, you know, every part of our life, but, you know, are we going to still, you know, be working and playing and enjoying life the same way and getting things done the same way? Or is it going to be a future, for, you know, a scientific, you know, future, a science fiction future?
I think we're going to see a lot of changes. So as I said, the progress, we have been making the progress. It's not a one-day progress. It's not like ChatGPT just suddenly came. My days in Google DeepMind, we were already kind of looking at things like, LLMs, and we were doing this. When the change came, when actually the models were big enough and the accessibility was good enough for individuals to interact with it. And that was my starting point as well. It's putting technology in people's hands is when things start to change. And to get to that point, there's a lot of work that is involved. So yes, we're going to see a lot of changes in different ways. So scientific development will improve considerably because now we have these powerful models which actually kind of do the research, give you what the outcomes of the summaries. You could individually go through 1,000 papers. Now you can go through 1,000,000 papers in a lot shorter time. So you're going to see huge advancement in technology, huge advancement in science. I mean, one of my favorites is biotech because it's a very slow sector, and that's getting accelerated. That's getting kickstarted. So that's an amazing thing. Which AI? I mean, we're saying AI in general, right? So we're not going specifically to LLMs or, you know, what technology is this kind of whole, you know, just some machine learning algorithms is also part of AI and this whole trend. So that's one thing which I feel is coming quite strongly. What one thing which Fetch is focused on, which is like a different take on just calling it AI, is how do you use this new AI or this capability that we've just now kind of started using properly? How can I use that to improve economic value exchange? How can I improve this economic gain in value by using it? And I think that kind of leads into your question about, I mean, are we going to have jobs and, you know, how are we going to enjoy it? How are we going to work with it? Now, if you look at the past decade or couple of decades, the biggest companies that you have seen come up are really digital aggregators. So digital aggregators in terms of social media, digital aggregators in terms of knowledge and information or products or anything. Like, you know, I give you an example of Uber, aggregation of cabs. You know, it's kind of taking something which is disparate and bringing it all together and putting it in an aggregated model. I think that's commercially something which is about to change. Information will be, the search will change, the search and discovery will change, the connectivity of things will change. You know, where we need to go to register our house or home to sell into an aggregator portal and then connect to somebody who wants to buy it, you don't need that middle ground because AI and the tools related to AI are bringing more decentralization effectively. And I think that's quite an interesting overlap. That's when we start seeing the decentralization come, and why is it there, and what is so relevant to the ledger technologies as well, because that's the premise, decentralization.
Just to dovetail on that, I mean, what you're describing just makes me think that, you know, in the future, maybe our kids or our kids' kids, they might not even know what a corporation is. It might just be, you know, some kind of decentralized ledger and some decentralized AI making decisions about, you know, resources in an unbiased mechanical way. It's just a crazy future to start to conceptualize about where this technology can go and why it's so important for, you know, this power to, you know, this power of this AI or the AGI, which people are referring to as, you know, this super powerful AI that can generalize and abstract things and all that kind of stuff. Get it out of the hands of, you know, Microsoft and Meta and the big corporations and diffuse the power between the people.
Yeah, I think one of the greatest examples of that, Bryce, is what's happened with Karate Combat, right? They ended up switching over to a DAO model, and I'm a big fight fan. So I always see UFC and Bare Knuckle and all these different events. And I had never seen or heard of a Karate Combat event until they switched to their DAO model. And now they're up on my feet all the time. I swear their numbers are bigger, their events are bigger, the fighters are more significant. They're pulling all these kinds of names. And I think that they're probably one of the best examples of how a DAO can be kind of structured and fitted in to a very traditional centralized model. And I completely agree. I think as we move into the future, there's going to be more corporations, more companies, more businesses that instead of looking at it of the traditional way of, hey, let's breaking things up into stock shares, I think there's going to be more saying, hey, let's actually move things on chain. Let's create a governance token. Let's create a DAO to kind of divvy things these things up, because what it does is it gives them true understanding and insight into their community, because their community is directly plugged in and correlated and involved. And that's just a space that AI can be so influential and helpful in.
Yeah. And I think that's a very good point you make, which is if you look at where the data is coming from, if you look at what we generate data, you know, individuals generate data, that data then goes through various platforms, it goes into the platforms, then you have this centralized entities working with that data to give us a service, which is the right service for us. Now, that's what the model is going to change, because the technology is there to change it. I mean, they did a great job for a while because there was no other way. I mean, how do you get your data? How do you process it? But what is interesting is, you know, not just generally AI as a whole, but also components of AI, the tools of AI, they're enabling you to control your own AIs individually and then interact when you need to interact, rather than relying on some one big entity which takes all the data and thinks and very, very accurately predicts what you do. In this case, your agent would always know, or your AI would always know what to predict, because you're telling it and it's storing that data. So you don't have to do, on one side, there's a big computational models coming. The other side, you don't actually have to do those computations because you're telling your agent what, you know, you're telling your AI what you like, what you don't like. So you don't have to deduct. It's a very straight feed into it, which slight change to where we are at the moment. So yes, we need to build these models on a lot of data, but then some cases you probably bleed it to the edges where, you know, you can have some edge models compute, and that you've seen recently, which has come across smaller and smaller models, which just train based on your data and your AI and then actually works for you. So you don't need huge models for that, but you do need huge models for some other things, just to understand the world, to understand what's going on.
Yeah, it truly does feel like it's ever expansive, right? I mean, there's so many different applications of how AI can be plugged into our daily lives. But I'm curious, from like the crypto side, how can AI accelerate Web3 adoption?
Okay, so if you look at what the current status quo is, it's crypto is mostly financial things. So you build a token, you sell a token, you hedge a token, you sell it again, you know, it goes up, it comes down, you buy it, you sell it. You know, that's the core thing that at the moment the crypto space is doing. I mean, I would say probably 90% of it, right? So if you look at it, you know, you're kind of, you have DEXs, which is generating volume. You have meme coins, which is generating volumes. You have you know, mostly you have these applications, right? What needs to happen for crypto to be successful is that we need to have real world use cases in some way, shape, or form using the crypto infrastructure. That's the key. So how can you bring use cases from the real world to come and do something on crypto? So, and that's exactly my point, which is what I'm saying, that you have these agentic networks which are going to evolve. They're not there yet, but they're coming. So what is an agent? An agent is a piece of software. It's a piece of AI which sits with you, sits with a functionality, sits with an action. And then you interact with other agents and you interact and do stuff. For example, in the old structure, if I want to book a cab, I go to Uber. I say, Uber, I need a cab. Uber goes, I have 10,000 drivers. I'm going to speak to them. I'm going to give you the best driver. What's the new model? The new model is I tell my agent, I need a cab. Agent goes around and says, hey, I got 3 or 4 local people. They're ready to come and pick you up. Do you want any of them? Right? And then you choose. So see how we have changed from a very heavy, central, and a very highly optimizational-centric model of Uber to a very localized, individual, decentralized kind of interaction. Now, that interaction needs to be maintained by somebody. If you put it in a central entity, it becomes central again, right? But you could easily put that on chain. You could put the transaction on chain. You could put the auditability of that on action on chain. You can actually put the search and discovery on chain. I mean, for example, one of our biggest smart contracts on Fetch is about search and discovery. How do agents register and how do agents get found and how do they connect and how do they deliver a service and how do they do the transaction? So you can see a reason for why a digital currency based on a decentralized ledger technology becomes important, because you have changed the paradigm. If we stick with the same paradigm trying to fix it, we're not going to get the traction on crypto. We're not going to get the traction on digital currencies. Digital currencies have to have a reason to exist. They have a tool, they have to have a reason. But decentralized ledger technology has got much more application. You can actually bring AI-based applications. You can actually use the DLTs to actually deliver a lot of things towards the ultimate objective, which is an application. You want to build an application which delivers a task, which delivers an objective. And if you can convert, and I'm kind of now, if you zoom out a bit, if you can build machines or entities or AIs or agents which take your objective and really root themselves into the decentralized ledger technology, so that when they transact on your behalf, when they transact and do anything on your behalf, it's embedded into the ledger technology, in the decentralized ledger technology. So it can use digital currency, it can use decentralized auditability, it can use decentralized training of machine learning models, it can use deployment of these models. Then you've changed the game. Then you see what is coming, because now you're changing all of those applications into the Web3 model. That's the game changer. That's what AI could bring.
And everything you just said, I mean, that if I was the CEO again of one of these big FANG stocks or whatever, I'd be tinkling in my little pants, to be honest, thinking about what you and the whole collective of crypto AI renegades are building. Because we're not going to need Google. We're not going to need any of these other software development houses, right? Or anything. We're decentralizing all of this, and AI is going to be able to really cut them out in a sense, especially when you can leverage the blockchain technology to govern it and to maintain the software. You were actually a really early, maybe the first investor in one of Google's, I think it was called DeepMind. Yes. And it was one of their early, you know, sort of deep research projects on how to leverage artificial intelligence. So So yeah. you were the man on the inside, and now you're kind of the man at the gates, if you will. So tell us about this dynamic.
Yeah, I don't think it's fair to say centralized entities don't have a role to play, and they always will. You know, yes, it could get marginalized over time, but you know, gathering all the information needs a lot of funding. To build these tools to scale requires a lot of funding, and they play a good role in doing so. So if I look at Google, Google organized the world. The information was organized by Google. If I look at Uber, for example, or any other cab service, they organized this whole marketplace, a marketplace of cabs, marketplace of something else, marketplace of information. There was no availability of such tools that could replace them. Now, and if I look back and see where DeepMind was, let's say in 2008, you know, nobody was talking about AI in the same way as we were. We were working with trying to build AGI then. I was one of the, well, I was the first investor in it, the founding investor effectively. And then I stayed with the company to find commercialization solutions for technology. Now, we can build wonderful technology, and we've been doing that for ages, but unless it becomes commercialized, it doesn't scale, it doesn't generate that economic value. I mean, this is exactly what happened with OpenAI. Not that Google didn't have the technology. The OpenAI just opened the doors and brought scale and said, hey, anybody can touch it, use it, you know, play with it. Suddenly, the whole thing changed. The technology was always there. I mean, we were using it in DeepMind way before it sold to Google, which was 2010, 2011, reading manuals for Civilization and playing the game. The computer was playing it, reading it, didn't have to train anything. So this was already happening at that point. So it's no, for me, it's wow. It wasn't as big technical breakthrough as it was a commercial breakthrough, the way they did it. They built this huge model and opened it up to the world.
It was also almost kind of a psychological breakthrough moment as well. Getting, you know, the people were ready for that kind of technology because it's magic. I mean, it really is magic. I remember, you know, one of my buddies was talking to me about the first time he used like DALL-E, and it was, you know, he just said, you know, draw, you know, whatever, a ballerina and a ballpoint pen or whatever. And it was like, boom. Like it just did it. And he was blown away. He goes, that was magic. For me, that was like, and that was his big moment. And so I guess people were ready for it as well, not only, you know, commercially, but psychologically.
But that happens with every technology, right? So you launch something, right. Something gets hyped up, but then it starts to get the development. You know, it's like taking the same example. We had, the first thing was building websites. Everybody was building websites, right? But then comes the problem of searching websites. Came Yahoo, listed all the websites, right? Then came Google, made it much better, much more efficient. So that cycle is just starting for AI. So what we saw was only the tip of the iceberg. We're not even touching anything yet. Because just generating something video is great, but it's as an opening gambit, right? What's coming after is personalized movies based on your taste, right? You can actually generate a movie, watch a movie, enjoy it. That's what's coming, which you can see. I mean, you know, all the applications that are coming to the market are showing you that. You can actually explain what kind of movie you like, and it generates it for you. I mean, Life 3.0, great book, exactly discusses things like that. So that's all happening. But what is now also quite interesting is, how is that going to change the shape of actions? It's the actions which we at Fetch focus on. How do you create something which actually takes actions for you, which takes your objective and not just generate this digital form, either of information or video, but also to actually go and perform actions on your behalf? I mean, we've seen huge improvements in how the LLMs are helping, or other technologies are helping robotics. So you give them your intent and the robot does it for you. So that's also coming. But also search and discovery for these actions is going to change. The way we build software is going to change. At the moment, just to give you an example, at the moment we say, here's my AI, and I'm going to ask it to write me a code, which is going to be, which I would have had to write. Now it writes it, right? So we're seeing that point right now, just how to generate code. But the next step is, why do you want to generate code? To generate code is to do an action of some kind. Well, why don't you just tell your agent to just do the action, right? You don't need to generate a website code so that people can come and interact with it. All you need to do is you need to, hey, here's my agent, which deals with a taxi, a cab, or whatever, connect it to my calendar, and somebody can just connect to it. So you don't need to build an Uber in the middle. So you don't need to write that amount of code that you used to write. So that's a paradigm shift.
Yeah, and I think it raises some good questions. One of the big ones that I've seen floating around is like, is my job in jeopardy? And so I think it raises the right question of like, whose jobs are in jeopardy here leading into the immediate future?
No one is safe.
No one is safe, yeah, indeed. Well, we've always said that through times, right? Yeah, it's always happened in the same way. It's some people's jobs are going to be out of fashion and they're going to have to retrain. Some people's jobs are going to stick around. I mean, physical jobs for now are okay. We're not going to see right now. We're not seeing a building trade using robots to build, you know, things, right? But that will come. It's the time scale. But what is quite interesting is that for a very long time, software developers, model builders, like machine learning model builders, they felt very safe. And I think this is definitely disrupting that side, you know, where you don't need coders. You don't need that many coders. You might still need very, very good coders for a while, but there will come a point, there will come a plateau where you don't even need them because you'll have enough good code. You'll have enough capability to generate new code if you need to generate new code. Because I have a fundamental issue with writing too much code because we seem to overcomplicate by writing monolithic code. You know, and again, this is a very interesting point. How is the code going to become agentic and AI based? So you have small microservices who can self-assemble to deliver you, you know, you could go and say to your whatever your interface is, go build me an Uber-like service. So rather than writing lines and lines of code, what it will do is it will go to these, assemble these agents and put them together, because all these agents do a small task. And if you put those tasks together and chain them, you achieve the same result, but without this, you know, monolithic kind of rigid functionality. You can be just as fluid as you like. You can just give it an objective and you just talk to it and it assembles the job for you, which we haven't seen yet, but that's starting to come.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's like just the natural evolution of technology, right? I mean, we look back in the old days and there's so many jobs that have since been replaced. I mean, there literally used to be a job for someone to be the active alarm clock and they'd go by people's houses and wake them up. I don't know if you all have seen the videos of this, but it's wild. And we think about that today. And we're like, how could that ever have been someone's job? There's so much more efficient way of doing these things. Same thing with like newspaper delivery. And now we have emails and we can look online and get our news. Well, the same goes for this, right? I think you're right. We look at like engineers and programmers and anyone that's involved with code. I've seen other people talk about the copywriting or marketing or editing space. I mean, heck, I've seen AI influencers now. They're not even real people. They are completely artificial intelligence that are just speaking into a camera and talking about stuff, and people follow them and they love it. And it just goes to show like how disruptive this can be, but it's not always a bad thing, right? I think this is always pushing us one step forward into the future. And I'm sure 50 years from now, we'll look back at this and we'll go, wow, I can't believe we used to do, you know, fill in the blank that way. There were such better ways, more efficient ways of doing things.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think we, as I said, it's just the beginning. There is a lot more to come. And if people think this market has come to its peak, I I would very strongly disagree. Of course, it's personal opinion, but I would not. I would say this is the beginning. I think we're going to see new businesses form. We're going to see new structures and micro businesses. So, you know, you might want to build a machine learning model or an AI model, and then you want to kind of monetize that model. That's a new way. It's not corporations. It's kind of what you have. It's your AIs, your machine learning models, your influencers, or whatever you kind of interact with. So I think what is quite important is that businesses embrace it because it's coming. In whatever shape or form, it needs to be, you need to start interacting with this new technology. It's like the same where people used to say, well, who's going to shop online? I mean, you know, I don't shop online. I can never shop online. But here we are. So that's exactly what's going to, I mean, I don't want to use AI to, I don't trust AI to do something for me. Yes, today, but look ahead. That's going to change.
Yeah, and especially when you kind of think about just how much investment and research and development is going into it now. I mean, all those effects, right? They're lagged effects. So the investment and the research happens now. We hear about it because it raises a bunch of money. It gets raised a lot of eyebrows. And then 5 to 10 years, it'll proliferate the world and kind of, you know, seep through. I guess my question is, of all the different areas that, you know, people can invest in research to kind of further artificial intelligence, what would you say is the area that is most, you know, maybe undercapitalized or needs the most attention? What kind of, you know, I know Sam Altman from OpenAI was saying, we just need more hardware. We just need more GPUs. That'll solve all of our issues. And we're going to raise, you know, trillions of dollars to do it. Is that the thing that truly needs to be most paid attention to with capital, or is there kind of something else?
Well, I disagree slightly with that. Let me just kind of qualify my response. I don't disagree that we will need hardware. I just feel that there is this moat building going on. You know, we're going to need to build moats. Mm-hmm. If you want to protect your business, you're going to need to do something. Because you know what businesses are, these big businesses are going to be at risk. Not because of decentralization, but just because the nature of this AI that we're building. So somehow we need to build a moat. And the moat is, how much money can I throw to get, how much hardware can I get to build the model, and then I run the model, and then I have control and I have a moat. But as I think famously Google said, you know, there is no moat. You know, we are going to be without a moat. So, and I think there is that element of moat building. Now, what is also then quite interesting is that who takes the customer? Who interacts with the customer? Now, if you see signs of this, you already see signs of this. OpenAI is an example. OpenAI could not have done what it did without Microsoft. Huge amounts of data Microsoft has. They have a very decent search engine, which never got much say in search, but because Google was, you know, ruling the place. So they needed to partner with some. But what they do have is they have millions and billions of customers using their products. So to release the technology into the already using customer base, that's a huge, powerful thing to do. At the moment, that's the phase we're in. Build a moat, you know, commercialize via people who already have the customer base, the consumer base. So Google has the same. They have the ability to go to everybody. Everybody uses Gmail, right? If they don't use Gmail, they use Microsoft Mail. So these are the people who are going to be able to use this AI very quickly, deploy it very quickly. So now if you want to protect your business, you want to create that moat, because not everybody has billions of dollars to build these GPU farms. And there is a little bit of territorialism going on as well. I mean, we have China, we have America, there's, you know, and we have like Europe doing not much, to be fair. We're just scrambling to do something, but yeah, we're struggling because there's not much going on.
Caught in the crossfire.
Yeah, so we just caught in the middle, but here we are. So what then we're going to see, once this phase is over, we're going to see applications. And that's the phase I'm most excited about. And I think that's the phase which I feel is going to be a game changer for other participants who want to come into this space now. Applications mean, how do I use this AI to bring new things to the market, new way of doing things to the market? So you have that kind of phase. It's on the horizon, but it's not there. And that's the phase which is going to really need, some investment.
Absolutely. And my gut feeling is that, a lot of those applications are going to actually be getting built by a kind of a decentralized cooperative or a collective. Some folks are referring to it as the artificial superintelligence. But this is an opportunity to learn more about this potential merger that's on the table between three of the largest AI foundations and AI projects in crypto: Ocean Protocol, Fetch AI, and Singularity Net. There's a proposed merger, and I think that a lot of smart applications will be getting built from that, but I don't know. So I want to ask you, what can you tell us about this big event? Because this is when I think I did the math, I think something like a $7 billion in total value kind of being merged together. I mean, this is no small deal.
Yes, but in AI terms, it's trivial, right? So it's not that big. If you look at the investments people are raising for the valuations people are raising. So this kind of came about, it's kind of started by me, but this is not just about the three companies. It's not about the three projects. It's not about the three sets of foundations. It's about what is the next phase in crypto that needs to come. Because I feel we are stagnating. That's why, we are leaning on meme coins, I feel we need to do something better. We need to do something. We need to improve our reputations. We need to bring applications, real world applications, to this space. So here's the problem. I mean, we don't have the resources these big corporations have. Right? If you look at how much money Google spent or Microsoft spent, I mean, just to train the first iteration of ChatGPT took them several billion dollars, right? Where in crypto are you going to get that from? So you need to pool resources together. And the whole point of this proposed merger, and we want to do it. We want to set a path. It's not about, is the merger is the big thing. No, it's the whole process which is the interesting bit. For me, that's what I'm quite excited about. So three projects which have, because, yes, we keep going on about decentralized technology is very collaborative, and no, because that's not our human nature. Everybody wants their project to be the best. They want the project to grow the best and not give in to, low value mergers and everything. But that's part of the life, and that's part of what this industry needs to see through. How, I don't know, because we are just on the journey now. I spoke to Singularity initially, and we discussed this, and we said how the technology stacks could work together. I don't think we have time to discuss the technology stacks, but, these are complementary technology stacks. I mean, they build the models, we build the application layer and the tools, and then we have Ocean who enables the data to come in to train the model and make action. So Ocean was the last one, last entry, because they're kind of several differences between similarities between Fetch and Singularity, and there's some complementary but different approaches which Ocean brings. So the thinking behind this merger is, let's pool our resources together. Let's first become a project which has high ability to raise money or to unlock value or economic value from either from their tokens or from combining the tech stack and the valuation. So let's get to a point where we can actually provide a viable alternative to the big corporation. But we can't lose the sense of decentralization. We have to maintain our right. own authorities and sovereignty. So it's not a merge of the foundations. It's not a merge of what your projects are. It's a collaboration of the projects, and it has different levels, and it can be done in different ways. We are exploring one way, and there might be others, and we're adapting according to what our requirements are. But don't forget, there is a whole regulatory framework we need to look after. This has never been done. So nobody's done it in this right. kind of scale. So we have to go through that process as well to make sure we don't cross any regulatory barriers in the sense that, you know, they're detrimental to any of the projects. So it's an involved process. But we've taken that step because we want to show that this is what this industry now needs.
Well, it sure sounds like you've been getting quite a bit of sleep these days.
One thing.
I mean, that's
not on the agenda.
Yeah. One thing you're lacking. No, it's an incredibly ambitious feat, and it's something that I just think people are, you know, we're currently all just, you know, I've been in the space for, you know, almost a decade, and this is something that I've never seen, and it's just so cool to see. And a lot of people understand mergers, you know, you get a bunch of shareholders together, hey, we're going to buy out this company, or we're going to get acquired by this company. How does it kind of work in this decentralized framework? Are token holders of Ocean, Fetch, and AGIX, are they all coming together, staking their tokens, casting their vote? Is there some kind of, you know, quadratic or weighted voting? How do you guys kind of think about the keeping us, you know, honest to the decentralization?
Yeah, and I think that's a very, very, very good question. And let us break it through and go through it. So initially, when the heads of the companies or heads of the projects or the foundations sat together, we liked the process. We came up with a agreement. We signed an agreement and saying that you know, let's do this. So that's step one. But now comes the more important step. Okay, we now have to go to our communities to get their votes. Now, we have three different approaches. Singularity has a multi-structure, multi-layered voting mechanism. So they had to do voting one way to get approval. We had to do voting on-chain because Fetch also is a layer one chain, which we're building for building, you know, kind of AI applications. Plus we have other. So we have the voting mechanism and we have a staking mechanism. So I can only talk about Fetch's one. Singularity would perhaps know what they wanted to do, but it's their approach. It's their control. They go to their community. They put the vote to the community. Either they say yes or no. If they say no, we don't do this. But luckily, they mm-hmm. all the community was quite excited. They said yes. Fetch community, we said yes. So if I look at the structuring, I mean, just give you an example. Singularity went to their community with one kind of vote where they said we're going to merge both, three of us, Ocean, Singularity, and Fetch together. That was their way of doing the vote. And we split our vote into two things. We said we're going to merge with Singularity and we're going to merge with Ocean. That was kind of our voting mechanism. So different structure, different style. We got the communities to vote. If the communities had said no to any of that, we wouldn't have proceeded. Communities said yes. Ocean has a completely different structure. They don't want voting. They want to govern. I don't know how they want to govern. They can govern as they want. I mean, it's up to them. We know their governance is slightly different, but that doesn't make any difference. What their governance is, if you hold the token, you like it, you hold the token, that means you're in. If we announce that we're going to do this merger and you don't like it, you leave, you sell the token and you get another one. So we don't, you know, they don't do a official voting. They do voting.
Yeah, almost like consent. It's almost like consent by default, right? It's like, hey, you've got plenty of notice. You can kind of opt out, and this is our governance. It's consent by default, with a plenty of disclaimer and warnings up front.
Yeah. So again, we don't want to control any of it. It's up to everybody to decide what they want to do. So that's how we kind of said the structure is loose, but it's a token merger as well. So put all your tokens in one place. Let's get going in one direction, because we want technology stacks to ultimately build application, full application, vertically integrated application stack in terms of technology. We're going to use our technology, but we're open for other people's technology. We're not going to stop people bringing more technology to. So the alliance will be, once this whole process is delivered, alliance will be open for other participants to kind of look into coming in. Again, with their own infrastructure, we have no control on their treasury. We have no control on their foundation decision-making. The only control they bring in is it complementary and can we integrate and make a much more coherent tech stack where you don't have to keep exchanging tokens? But if it doesn't matter if you do. You know, you can keep your own token. You don't want to merge, don't merge the token. So it's a very flexible arrangement. And that's really the objective, which means that it's fairly complex as well, just to do the initial part. Once we've done the initial part, and once the changes are kind of through and we've seen this process through, then it's a blueprint for everybody. So, you know, we'll see a lot more of these if this becomes successful.
Yeah. Well, I'm very confident that of all the people who should be kind of leading this charge, you, my friend, are the person to tackle this, I think you said, fairly complex process. fairly complex. No, it's...
I'm comfortable with algorithms, and I'm comfortable with, at the moment, with AI. I think when humans get involved, a lot of emotion comes in and things change. You know, people have different perspectives. So we have to be fully mindful of that if we're going to kind of deliver something like that. So it's not just complex because of the structuring. It's complex because we are humans.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're never going to be able to kind of get rid of, you know, I always say like logic and emotion don't occupy the same space at the same time. So you're just never going to be able to fight feelings and fight emotion. We are, at the end of the day, organic compounds that have these chemical reactions that make us feel love or feel fear or anything like that. And, you know, computers are allowed to kind of abstract all that emotion away. And so it takes kind of a very interesting character and moment in time to be able to balance both. And Humayun, we're glad you're leading the charge here. So we'll let you get back to building the future of tech. Finance, AI, all that good stuff. But before we do, we just want to let everybody know how to get plugged into the community. And, you know, or is there anything maybe that we didn't ask you that you wanted to address while you're here? Just last couple of questions there.
I just want our communities to engage with this AI. And we are releasing so many different ways for you to do it, because we're providing all the tools to to generate an agent, interact with AI. So please come and join the community. And we're going to see quite some exciting stuff over the next year or 2 years. Leaving the crypto kind of ups and downs aside, it will be a very interesting few years. We have a Twitter. We have website fetch.ai. Follow us on Twitter, join us on Telegram. We're updating the community all the time, but it's quite exciting time. So get engaged. I mean, if you're a developer and you're looking to do a business in a new way, we have all the tools, we have funding, we can help you with that. So we're really inviting techpreneurs, developers to come and join this journey with us.
Absolutely. Well, Humayun, we really enjoyed it. Brendan, what do you think? Are you ready to sit here, eat some popcorn, and watch the downfall of big centralized tech? And maybe not the entire downfall, but maybe just a little bit of power taken back.
You don't want that. You don't
want exactly. I'm ready to.
Yeah, we don't want the stock market to crash, though.
cause a complete stock market crash, global fiasco. But no, you know, I am ready to see big tech rivaled. I think competition is something that's healthy for every market, mm-hmm. because the more true competition that there is, it inspires all the players involved to produce better quality products, better services, and it advances everything.
Yeah.
So we're rooting for you. Just know that, you know, you're welcome back every time. We love having you on, and we're excited to see everything that's going to happen to the AI space over the next couple of years.
Love it. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, everybody at home, thanks for watching, and thank you for joining us.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.